Welcome to the 250th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your temporary host for the day, Patrick Winograd. In this edition, our topics are an overview of my weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and of course our weekly look at college basketball as the season turns the corner into March and the madness is ready to begin. But let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. Starting in college basketball, I went 2-2 in those predictions. Number 15, Baylor beat number 7, Kansas, 82-74. Number 12, Creighton beat number 5, Marquette, 89-75. So I picked those two upsets of top 10 teams correctly, even though not really upsets because I think both Baylor and Creighton were favored, but still, in terms of the rankings, they were technically upsets. Then number 4, Tennessee beat number 14, Alabama, 81-74. That was a loss for me. Alabama had the lead at the half. This game is close throughout, honestly. Very, very fun to watch. Very, very entertaining. Definitely lived up to the expectations of potentially the top two teams in the SEC, although beyond Tennessee, there's a big, big fight for second place between Alabama and Auburn and South Carolina at this point, too, in Kentucky. But I did get that one wrong. And then Gonzaga, number 23, beat number 17 St. Mary's 70-57 to cap off their week of two quad one wins in a row, really, really helping their resume and improving their tournament status at the very, very, very end of the season. Something that you don't see too often, but congrats to Gonzaga for doing that. Then you had my NBA predictions. I went 1-3, so another rough week for me in the NBA. And I should mention, combined for a 3-5 overall record, 1,011,652 overall, a 60.8% winning percentage. I forgot to mention that at the beginning. But in the NBA, going back to that, I went 1-3. As I said, the Sixers beat the Mavericks 120-116. This team has now started to actually win those games without Joel Embiid that they were previously losing that I had said they needed to win all the time. They've kind of flipped that script and they've turned it around and started to win those games, which is a good sign for Philly going forward. That they're starting to stay afloat more without Joel Embiid. But for other teams, you got to capitalize when you play playoff teams that don't have their best players, especially from the Mavericks' perspective in a very, very crowded West. Then you had the Clippers who beat the Timberwolves 89-88. These first two losses that I took, I'm not discouraged by them at all. 4 points was the margin of the Mavericks game. A 1-point loss for the Timberwolves. I'm not feeling too bad about that, to be quite honest. But the Knicks beat the Cavaliers 107-98, another game where the team with injured players won. The Knicks not having Julius Randle, we'll see when he comes back. We'll talk about it a little more later. But they did beat the Cavs 107-98 over the weekend. And then finally, the game I got right was that the Thunder beat the Suns 118-110. So I have one correct NBA prediction since the All-Star break. Looking to turn that around soon, but I will admit, I'm stuck in college basketball fever. It's going to be hard for me to pay attention to the NBA at all, so we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, obviously, my predictions for next weekend will be posted on our website on Thursday. But with that, let's turn our attention to the look at the NBA with the most impressive teams of the last week. I will start with the Orlando Magic. They went 3-0 in the week. They beat Detroit, Utah, and Brooklyn. Look, everything has been clicking for them recently to the point where they're now playing themselves, and they have played themselves out of, at this point, the play-in bracket. And although their cushion isn't that huge, they are closer to the 4th-seeded Knicks than they are to the 8th-seeded Pacers after this recent hot streak. There are four teams that are bunched up between 4 and 8, only separated by, I think, 3 or 4 games total, maybe 3.5. But the Pacers are on the upper end of that instead of the lower end. Or sorry, the Magic are on the upper end of that. The Pacers are on the lower end of that. We'll talk about that later. But look, they're finally regaining their early season form. And they're doing that at the perfect time. Obviously, this week's schedule, we talked about it. Detroit, Utah, Brooklyn. It's a cakewalk. But they've still won six of their last 7 games overall. And really, for a young team like this, even if the schedule is easy, you still need to see them win some games because they just haven't proven it before. We don't know what they're going to do post-All-Star break and when the games start to matter more because it's a lot of young pieces on this team, like I said. But so far, they are doing great at handling the second half of the season with a little extra pressure added on their team. Then you have the Celtics. We do know how this team performs in the clutch. The answer is they perform pretty well. They went 3-0 this week. The reason why they're on here, though, is not because they went 3-0. I said it last week, and I might sound like a broken record saying it again, but if you keep winning at the rate the Celtics went at over the last few weeks, you could be the best team of all time, and you still have to be on this list just because of how many games they've won in a row at this point. Even though they've won 11 games in a row, and the 6-game lead they have over the Thunder and the Wolves for the best record in the league are impressive, I think it's even crazier to mention the margins that they beat teams by this week. They beat the Warriors by 52, they beat Dallas by 28, and they beat Philly by 18. That's just ridiculous. These are playoff teams. These are not random teams. This is not, you know, if they had done that against the Magic schedule, I think we'd all be just kind of move on with it, you know? You look at Detroit, that's a team that you beat by 52. They're not that good. But the thing is, these are all playoff teams fighting for their playoff lives. Most, two of these games were nationally televised. Maybe the Sixers game was too. There was a chance it was all three of them. But it didn't matter. The Celtics just came out and destroyed these teams. And now, like I said, a 6-game lead for the best record in all, the best overall record, I should say, but also I think an 8-game lead for the second seed. So, over the second seed in the East. So, the Celtics, excuse me, are just having a crazy season, and they just, no one can slow them down right now. And speaking of the Bucks, that's why I said that name, because I was thinking about them. They went 4-0 this week. They beat the Clippers, they beat the Bulls, they beat Charlotte twice. Even though they beat the Hornets for two of their wins this week, this team is playing really great basketball right now. They've won 6 games in a row to reclaim the 2 seed in the East, and if it weren't for the ridiculousness of the Celtics' current hot streak that we just talked about, I think the Bucks' dominance would be the talk of the NBA entirely. Last night, their win over the Clippers didn't have Giannis. It was a 15-point comeback. They've proven that they can win in a multitude of ways, which is necessary for a playoff team. And also, with Doc Rivers, obviously, the narrative was, look at their record with him. It's not very good. They're just not playing up to their standards. Now it seems like the Bucks are trying to, well, they're not trying to. They're starting to get things clicking in Milwaukee, and that's a scary sight for a lot of teams, as, you know, out of all the contenders, it's them and the Nuggets who've actually won titles recently. So you got to watch out for this team. They obviously have the championship pedigree, and then they added Damian Lillard to that, who is a known playoff performer. So it'll be interesting to see what happens down the stretch at the end of the season. But the Bucks right now, playing some good basketball, climbing up the standings. Speaking of playing some good basketball and climbing the standings, and speaking of recent champions, you have the Denver Nuggets. They went 3-0 this week. They beat the Lakers, they beat Miami, and they beat Sacramento. Don't look now, but they are closing in on the 1 seed in the West. I can't overstate how hard it would be for other teams to try to beat Denver with home court advantage, so this recent 6-game streak is looking extremely important to the Western Conference playoffs outlook and where the Nuggets will finish in the West. Probably alters the course of the playoffs pretty significantly. I think last year proved that this is not a team that you want to go on the road and play against, and if that's going to happen again this year, I don't want to say just book it, they're going to be in the NBA Finals again, but it would give them a pretty good chance, and I don't think most teams would want to deal with playing Denver on the road without knowing that they'd have more home games over the course of the entire series, especially some of these inexperienced teams that, you know, you think later in the playoffs, you're talking about the Wolves, you're talking about the Thunder. Can they win home? Can they win road games and steal games to swing home court advantage in their favor over the defending champs? I don't know if they can. I mean, I think there's something to be said about, you know, the pressure would be on Denver, that's for sure. But at the same time, I don't know if without the experience, I just don't know how well those teams will hold up. Obviously, the Wolves are more experienced than the Thunder. They don't deserve to be in the same category per se, but the Wolves haven't gone far in the playoffs at all. They have been there, but they haven't done much once they've gotten there so far. Besides, you know, steal a few games, have a few entertaining series, but no big series wins yet for them. But now, moving to the flip side of that, let's go to the least impressive teams of the week. We will start with the Dallas Mavericks. They beat Toronto this week, but that was all they could muster. They lost to Cleveland, Boston, and Philly. This team was hot for a few weeks, so they get a little bit more of a pass than a team normally would for placing this high on this list. However, this week they did have the worst record of any contender. All the teams that were winless are just terrible, which happens a lot. But, you know, they can't avoid this list in its entirety as a result of that. But even though they played a really tough schedule and lost two of their three games by a combined 6 points to Cleveland and Philly, they also fell in the standings all the way down to eighth place in the West, with both the Lakers and the Warriors breathing down their necks, just behind the Suns and the Kings. So not a great sign for the Mavericks, but we will see what they do going forward. And speaking of the Suns, they are the second team on this list. They went 1-2 this week. They beat Houston, but then they lost to Houston after that, and then they lost to OKC. This team has just been inconsistent all year long. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I started to put my faith behind this team, have my belief in them again, and then they just let me down again. You know, I picked against them in a game that I would never pick against them in if they had played up to expectations throughout the season, but they're just kind of letting me down over and over again, and I'm saying, wow, this team just isn't what we thought it was going to be coming into the season. Of course, the peak of this team is still much higher than almost any team, not just in the West, but in the entire league, with the big three of Booker, Beal, and Durant. But they still need to put it together going forward, and also they have yet to really show off that peak at any individual time, so that's something they're going to need to do, because claiming the play-in spot that they currently occupy would be a massive underachievement given the preseason hype about this team. I guess technically now they're tied with Sacramento and they're out of the play-in, but they were in the play-in before yesterday, and it's basically, they're basically right there. They're a half game away at best. Then you have the Knicks. They are third on this list. They went 1-2. I did mention their win over Cleveland in my weekend predictions. That's a good win, but they lost to Golden State and they lost to New Orleans. They're dealing with a heavy impact from the injury bug, but there isn't a guarantee that if/when. We don't know if he's coming back. We don't know if he's coming back. Julius Randle comes back this season. We don't know just what will happen. So they can't just rely on their wounds naturally healing over time by getting guys back over injury because, again, the timeline is murky. We don't know if he's coming back. We don't know when he would come back. Is it before the playoffs? Is it before the end of the regular season? Are they going to be a play-in team by the time he comes back and he needs to help drag them out of it? But look, I've said all season long that the Sixers need to play better without Joel Embiid, no matter what his return status or timeline is, and I think that the Knicks are now starting to fall into the same category of needing to improve their play without some of their better players to really inspire some confidence in them going forward, especially when it comes to playoff time, because, you know, injuries happen in the playoffs as well. And then finally, to end off this list, the Pacers are on here. They went 1-2. They lost to San Antonio and New Orleans. They did beat New Orleans earlier, but while the Spurs have definitely played much better basketball to start the second half of the season, this is not a loss a contender should be taking. You just can't do that. They also split with the Pelicans, which is more what anyone would expect, but overall, Indy needs to get back into their group because they've fallen all the way down to 8th in the Eastern Conference standings. I was talking about it with the Magic earlier, but this team is now looking like the young play-in team, and the Magic are now looking like the young team that's going to make the playoffs. Really, since the in-season tournament, the Pacers just have not been able to reclaim that same form for the rest of the season, and they're going to need to down the stretch. Halliburton's had some really bad games recently. From a statistical standpoint, he got shut out in a game, I think, for like the first time since like his rookie season or something like that. But they're going to need everybody to step up before the end of the season because this team just has been a shell of its former self for a while now. And it's going to be a problem if they can't get out of the play-in bracket because they don't want to be playing the one or the two seeds in the first round. That is not going to bode well for them. But that's all I have for the NBA this week. We will now move on to a longer look at college basketball. Of course, a longer look as we get into the meat, not even the meat of the season, the final turn of the season. Actually, the final week of regular season action will be next week, but let's finally actually do that and turn our attention to college basketball. The week started off with a bang as BYU beat number 7 Kansas in Allen Fieldhouse 76-68. This was a win that BYU didn't necessarily need, but it definitely guaranteed a tournament bid for them, no matter what happens in the rest of the season. Just a great win to get on the road in a very hard place to win. Very, very quality win that improves their resume and pretty much brings them up to a 5 or a 6 seed
Then you have number 16, Kentucky, who went on the road and beat Mississippi State 91-89. This team will always put up a bunch of points. They've been a little inconsistent in terms of being able to play good defense, and this game was definitely one of those games where they didn't play too well on the defensive end, but a win is a win regardless, and Kentucky will be happy with that one. And speaking of no defense, well, number 13, Illinois, beat Minnesota 105-97 at home. No defense being played in that game, but again, Minnesota definitely needing that win to stay in the tournament picture. Now really just kind of long shots for that. They were not able to get it. It would have been huge. For Illinois' perspective, just keep winning and you should be able to secure probably a 3 seed if you win out, at least a 4 seed. Have a tough game tonight against Purdue. That can help a lot in terms of where they would end up in the tournament. But for now, sitting at around a 4 seed. For teams that are also sitting around that mark, you have Auburn. Playing against the number 4 overall team in the country, Tennessee. Tennessee won that game 92-84. It's a big win for Tennessee, obviously. Not worried about their tournament odds. Only worried about can they claim a number 1 seed, which is looking more and more likely by the day. This win definitely went a long way to doing that. And another one they got later in the week might have actually put them over Arizona for the time being, but not in my personal opinion, but we'll talk about that later. But continuing on in the midweek action, number 5, Marquette, hammered Providence 91-69. Providence, a team that is desperately in need of wins to, add to their resume. They do have 5 quad 1 wins. They definitely have signature wins and quality wins across their resume, but just too many losses to be able to survive off of that alone. So they're definitely on the bubble right now, and this game didn't help them at all. Then you have number 8, Iowa State, who beat Oklahoma 58-45. Oklahoma should be in the tournament. I'm not really that worried about them making the tournament as a whole, but they could easily claim a much better seed if they were able to win some of these tough games at the end of the year here. Because the Big 12, I mean, it's just stacked. Every time you play, you might be nearing a quad one game. So if they can pick up, another win, maybe 2 in the Big 12 tournament, they might be looking at maybe a 6 or a 7 seed or an 8 seed. Instead of, where they're currently at, more 8-9 range. But then, number 12, Creighton, who beat Seton Hall 85-64. Seton Hall, same positioning as Providence, firmly on that bubble, maybe in a little bit of a better position than Providence. But then you have Creighton, who is, of course, fighting for potentially getting a top 3 seed. They're definitely in the top 4 conversation as we speak. They are a top 4 seed for now, but they are looking to improve that. In my most recent bracket, I actually do have them as a 3 seed, but it's a tough, tough road to keeping that. There are a lot of teams bunched up there, and a lot of teams that have great opportunities left on their schedule still. Creighton probably just had its biggest game left by playing Marquette, and we'll talk about that game in a second. But speaking of one of the teams that's fighting for that 3 seed, number 14, Alabama, beat Ole Miss 103-88. Certainly a win that helps their tournament resume, a quad one win, a tough road win as well. And a good sign of this team being able to win in all environments against a tournament-hungry team, and for Ole Miss, just falling further out of the tournament picture. So not exactly the greatest thing for Ole Miss. But then you have number 18, South Carolina, who beat Texas A&M 70-68. Another team that's fighting in that 3 to 5 seed range. South Carolina definitely lower than Alabama in that range, but at the same time, they are still definitely a very solid team, and if they keep winning, the metrics will improve along with it, and maybe they will get into that range. But A&M, same situation as Ole Miss, needing some wins, not necessarily getting them down the stretch for now. I mean, they still have more than enough opportunities to continue to improve their resume, but how they've looked so far is not a great sign for them. Then you have number 23, Gonzaga, who beat San Francisco 86-68. A good road win for a Gonzaga team that needed quality wins. They were finally getting their second quad one win of the year by getting this win over San Francisco, so a good sign for them. Loyola Chicago beat number 21 Dayton 77-72. Dayton is continuing to lose games here and there. I don't necessarily think they're going to move out of the tournament picture or anything like that, but when you consider how they had looked at certain points in the season, this is a little bit of a disappointing finish, and they're definitely going to drop into the 5 or the 6 range, maybe even the 7 seed range, if they can't get back on track and win the A-10 tournament. Then you have number 1, Houston, who beat Oklahoma 87-85. Oklahoma staying tough in this game.
But Houston proving that they can win with more than just their defense. This is something that they haven't really done all year long, but in this game, proving they're able to do it, it's a good sign for them going forward and really improves my confidence in that team heading into the tournament. Then you have number two, Purdue, who beat Michigan State 80-74. Michigan State could have guaranteed their tournament spot with this win for sure. I mean, I don't think they're going to fall out of the picture. Their schedule's been really hard. But if they had claimed this win, they really would have been a lock for the tournament, maybe trending towards a 7 or an 8. But instead, they're kind of down in that 9-10 range for now. They do have some big games left on the schedule, one against Northwestern, one at Indiana. Very winnable games, both of those, but at the same time, both also very losable. So we'll see what happens with Michigan State in the rest of the season. Then you have the Tennessee game that I was talking about. They beat Alabama over the weekend, talked about it in my predictions. Very, very important for their chances as a one seed. Number 12, Creighton, improved their resume with that win over Marquette that we talked about in my predictions. Then you have number 6, Arizona, who beat Oregon 103-83. This team keeps winning, but I don't know if it's enough just because of how weak the Pac-12 is overall. It might not be enough to end up propping up their resume and keeping their one seed. But for now, they're still a one seed. And I'd like to keep it that way, but at the same time, Tennessee's gaining ground on them. They were weak last week by beating two top 10 teams in the net, getting two high quad one wins, one on the road, one at home. Really, really damaged the chances for Arizona, but that's something to track as the season goes on. They probably have to win the Pac-12 tournament to get that one seed, and if they do and Tennessee also wins the SEC, it would go to Tennessee. I'm no doubt in my mind about that, but they will just have to hope for a Tennessee loss, and if not, they'll still claim a two seed pretty easily. But then you have number 15 Baylor, who beat number 7 Kansas 82-74. Talked about it in our predictions, but speaking from the bracket perspective of this game, this was a game that Kansas needed to stay on the two line. They didn't come up with a win, so they moved down to a three seed with Baylor. Baylor potentially moving above them. They're at least in that 9-10 range on the overall seed list. So definitely a solid three seed as is. And then if you want to talk about the team that replaced Kansas on the two line, that would be number 8, Iowa State, who beat UCF 60-52 on the road. Iowa State just continues to add wins on their resume. They lose really close against good teams. They win pretty much every game at home. I mean, they have a really, really, really solid resume, good metrics to back it up as well. So this is a team that, you know, people probably will sleep on them heading into the tournament as people tend to do with teams that are defensive heavy. But at the same time, this is a dangerous team. They can play with anybody in the country, and they've had stronger offensive production recently than they did over a large portion of the season. So I'm liking Iowa State and how they're trending at the end of the year as well. Then you have number 9, North Carolina, who beat NC State 79-70. NC State closing out the season with some big games against their in-state rivals, but going 0-2 in those games, as we'll get to later. For North Carolina, they just have to keep winning to try to claim that 2 seed. Definitely at a little bit of a scheduling disadvantage playing in the ACC, but they do have that game left against Duke. And if they're able to beat Duke on the road, they have a pretty strong conversation, maybe even to get a 1 seed, although it's kind of a long shot. I think they're still in a group that's firmly behind teams like Arizona and Tennessee, but it is definitely not out of the realm of possibility that they could claim a 1 seed before the end of the season. Speaking of Duke, they destroyed Virginia 73-48. Look, Virginia is not a team that I want to make the tournament because they're boring and they don't score, like, at all. But they've stockpiled a lot of wins over the course of the year. That one really hot streak that they had is probably going to propel them into the tournament regardless. But they are currently on the bubble. They're just definitely on the higher end of it. It's a really, really interesting discussion, and we'll see what the tournament committee does with them. But I think if they're able to not, you know, take some really bad losses at the end of the season, I think they're going to be fine for the tournament, as much as I might not want them to be. But then you have Auburn, who beat Mississippi State 78-63. Mississippi State just outside the top 30 in the net, so Auburn still only has one quad one win all year long, which is crazy to think about. But they have also won every game by double digits, I believe, all season long. So when they win, they've clearly proven, I guess I should say, that they're way ahead of the teams kind of in the middle of the pack of the country. They don't even keep those teams close. But they also haven't proven that they're an upper echelon team because they haven't beaten any of the other upper echelon teams. So Auburn is a very interesting case. I don't know what to make of them heading into the tournament.
But for now, they just need to keep winning, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll get one of those big wins in the SEC tournament, and that'll change the perception around this team. But for now, they're just a team that hammers bad teams, and not necessarily can't beat, but, you know, hasn't beaten the great ones just yet. But speaking of teams who are playing great teams, Wisconsin played number 13 Illinois. Wisconsin's kind of like Virginia. Like, they're guaranteed to be probably a top 7 or an 8 seed, even though they've lost 7 of 9 games, I think. So it's a really interesting discussion, but the fact of the matter is they played 14 quad 1 games, I think, already, and they got 7 wins in those games. They've won over Marquette. Their only losses are to teams like... They only lost to tournament teams in the non-conference. They were 16-4 with 20 games into the season with a ridiculous non-conference schedule up to number 6 in the AP poll, so they can't drop out of the tournament, as much as people might want that to happen. They might be a good pick to exit the tournament early, but they will be in it. They just for some reason, have hit a wall and they can't win games anymore. But then you have, and by the way, great win for Illinois to claim that big quad one win on the road, improving their tournament hopes in terms of where they would be in the seeding. Then you have Kentucky, who beat Arkansas 111-102. Again, takeaway from this game, Kentucky doesn't play defense. That's pretty much all I got. Arkansas is not a team that should put up 100 on anybody because they're just not very good. But Kentucky is here to oblige to other teams scoring a lot of points on them. Then you have number 23 Gonzaga, who went on the road and avenged their earlier season loss to St. Mary's, beating them 70-57 in their building. St. Mary's had already clinched the regular season title in the WCC and the number one seed in the conference tournament there. But it's still a big win for Gonzaga because they all of a sudden went from a team that was firmly on the bubble, last four in. Sometimes for some people, they were out of the tournament. I never really bought into that, but they are now all of a sudden a solid, like, 8 or 7 seed in the tournament, according to most. I think Bracket Matrix has them floating in maybe the 8-9 range. I personally have them as a 7 seed because now they have 3 quad one wins. They have no bad losses, and they've looked really, really good at the end of the season. And their losses, again, UConn, San Diego State, Purdue in Maui, I mean, they don't have bad losses. So we'll see what Gonzaga can do. If they can win the WCC tournament, they could get all the way up to a 6 seed, potentially, depending on what else happens in the country. But for now, sitting at a 7, and it doesn't help them, though, that they're going to stay idle and then only play 2 games at a maximum in their conference tournament, though, because they can't improve their standings on their own. It has to be through other teams losing, which we'll just have to see what happens. Speaking of one of those teams that could help them out, number 18 South Carolina beat number 24 Florida 82-76. Both of these teams floating in the 5-6, 7-ish range. So all of these teams could contribute to where Gonzaga's seeding ends up, depending on how they play in the SEC tournament. But for now, it's South Carolina claiming another good win, just showing how strong of a team they are. They had 2 bad losses at the beginning of the year, but other than that, I don't know how the metrics say what they do about this team. This team's legit. I don't know if that, you know, they could still lose in the first round to like a McNeese State or, you know, an App State, one of those 12 seeds, but at the same time, I could really see this team getting hot for a weekend, making a run, maybe even knocking a 1 seed out of the tournament from the 5 seed. I don't want to make that prediction, but it's possible. And then you have number 19, Washington State, just needing to win games to, they're already locked in the tournament, but just needing to win games to keep their seeding. They beat UCLA 77-65, a good win for them. Boise State beat New Mexico 89-79. This was a very important game because both of these teams were floating in the 9-10 seed range before the game. New Mexico slides down to the true bubble, sitting at, you know, maybe a last four in team, I think, for most people at this point. Boise State, on the other hand, claims the win, gets up to like an 8 or a 9, or keeping that 9 seed at least. So, very important game there. New Mexico really needs to get some of the wins upcoming on the rest of their schedule, or at least a few in the Mountain West Conference. Otherwise, they're going to be on the outside looking in when it comes to Selection Sunday. Then you have Iowa, who beat Northwestern 87-80 on the road. Northwestern, Matthew Nicholson suffered an injury in this game. We will see how long he may be out for. Reports initially from campus, not too good, but those are rumors, so I'm not going to address any of them. But then Iowa, obviously, getting that big win. They have been playing so much better recently, and if they had just, I mean, This team is a loss to Michigan away, or not having a loss to Michigan at home, away from being in the tournament, in my opinion. If you take that quad three loss off their ledger, I think this is a tournament quality resume. But instead, they are still on the outside looking in for now. They definitely have opportunities, though, to get into it. They play Illinois this weekend in their season finale, and if they can win that game, they're a tournament team, in my opinion, if they can also not take a bad loss in the Big Ten tournament. And then, perhaps the most important game on the bubble this weekend, Villanova beat Providence 71-60 on the road. That's just a really, really strong win to get. Villanova probably below Providence heading into that game in most people's brackets, maybe around the same spot, maybe a little bit higher. Beating them on the road, though, that changes the perception. Providence now looking more like a team on the outside looking in, and Villanova looking like a team that's solidly in the field. Their underlying metrics have been great all season long. They're now up to, like, their resume looks closer to Michigan State's than it does to any of the other teams on the bubble, frankly. And Michigan State has gotten a pass all year long because of their tough schedule. Villanova played a tough schedule, too. They just have had some really weird losses at the beginning of the season, but I think the tournament committee will look past Villanova's inability to win games in the Big Five Challenge, considering how they played at the end of the season and considering how they played when Justin Moore has been healthy, especially recently. Then you have BYU, who claimed another big win, erased a huge deficit and beat TCU 87-75. Once again, BYU showing off some great performances on the offensive end. TCU, on the other hand, kind of falling apart at the end of the season. Again, not one of, kind of in the Michigan State, Northwestern-ish range, where they're probably not going to miss the tournament, but they would like to get some wins to improve their seeding and make sure that it's not a stressful selection Sunday, even if they should be more confident that they're in than most people would think they are. And then you have number three, UConn, who beat Seton Hall 91-61. Not good for Seton Hall to lose this game by this margin. Keeping it close probably would have improved their net and their KenPom. I mean, you look at Michigan State, they lost that game by six over the weekend to Purdue, and they moved up two spots in the net. So if UConn had, well, I'll say this, if Seton Hall had played UConn close, they could have gotten a metrics boost and they needed, because that's really the thing that's lacking. Their overall, their wins and their quality of wins and their schedule, it's not bad. It's just the underlying computer stuff that isn't as good. Then you have number nine, Duke, who beat NC State 79-64. That game was last night. Big win for Duke as they now head to the old showdown with North Carolina to finish off the season. Then you have number 11, Baylor, who came back, beat Texas 93-85, despite Max Asemus having like 33 points or something like that. Really, really entertaining game to watch. Baylor set a Big 12 record for three-point percentage in a game. They hit 69% of their threes, including Jalen Bridges, who had over 30 himself on, I think, like 6 of 7 from 3 or 7 of 8 from 3. But finally, that is all we have for this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Of course, conference tournaments are starting, and next week we will have bubble talk and auto bid talk, but please be sure to check out that next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 12th, where we will once again look at my weekend predictions, having maybe a little bit of an abbreviated look at the NBA, and then review the big week in college basketball. In the meantime, be sure to check out my additional content, including my NCAA tournament brackets that will be updated on Mondays and Fridays, maybe an extra update here and there as we get to the end of the season. And also definitely on the final day of the season, I will have a Selection Sunday update predicting what I think the final bracket should be or what I think it will look like. And then obviously my picks for next weekend's games that will be posted as always on Thursdays. All of that on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.